We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Thursday, March 7th, and that means that coming right off the heels of Super Tuesday, on Tuesday, tonight we have the State of the Union, and that annual address will be given by President Joe Biden tonight, and his chief of staff says to Politico that you will hear a very enthusiastic president. So, you know, we'll see. A very energized president, actually. Energized was his word. And he said, this is a big moment, and this president rises to those big moments. The State of the Union is an annual tradition. And, you know, as much as it's become a speech that is more political, and of course, you can see the political division of the parties, because generally when the president is speaking, then his members of Congress from his own party will stand and cheer and applaud while the opposition party stays seated and silent. And so you can see down political lines, and it's much more of a almost a self-affirmation speech of look at everything the administration is doing, rather than the original constitutional intent, which was to actually inform Congress. And so is the State of the Union actually necessary? Well, it's constitutionally required. So it goes back to Article 2, Section 3, which says, he shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union. Then goes on to talk about a couple of other things that the president shall do. So shall in the legal sense is different than may, which may is optional. Shall is mandated or required. So when the text says he shall, then that's required. And the from time to time means that it's not required that it has to be an annual speech, just from time to time. And so in theory, could be more than once a year, but in modern history and presidential history, it's become more of an annual tradition, and the Speaker of the House will invite the president to come to the floor of Congress and to give his speech. But historically, so George Washington, who was our first president, gave the State of the Union speech and an information to Congress from the floor of the Congress. But then Thomas Jefferson, who, of course, was our third president, he decided to do that in writing and didn't want to go and address, just gave the information. And that technically fulfilled the State of the Union in terms of Article 2, Section 3, because simply giving the Congress information of the State of the Union, that can be fulfilled in writing, not necessarily a speech. And that became a tradition into then, it was about the 1930s or so with President Wilson, who then decided that he would go back and actually address Congress in person. And then it's become more historically over the years, especially with the rise of modern media, radio, like we're discussing here, and then television, then it became more of an opportunity for presidents to address the American people rather than just the members that were in the House. I personally think that it would be much better suited if the American people didn't see that speech. If it was just between the president and the members of Congress, so that it wasn't this national spectacle that it's become, and the opportunity, especially in a presidential election year, to use it almost like a campaign speech. Of course, the president in this capacity really shouldn't be campaigning, but everybody knows that he does. And there's always speculation, will Biden mention Trump, for example, tonight? Do they mention political opposition? Would he mention Trump just in a former administration, former president sense? According to Biden's chief of staff, Trump will not be mentioned tonight. So we'll see how that goes. But really, the purpose constitutionally was to inform Congress. And Congress isn't really being informed tonight. It's just a fulfillment technically of the Article 2 requirement, but it's much more for the American people. And you may hear some very familiar words, which actually go all the way back to President Gerald Ford. And he was the first president right after Watergate to attach the word "is" to the State of the Union, and making the State of the Union more of the state, meaning more of a verb rather than a title. And he said the State of the Union is not good. And that was in 1975, and he drew a clearly negative conclusion. But then President Ronald Reagan came back and said the State of the Union is strong. And that phrase has been used by every president since, other than President George H.W. Bush, who became a little more philosophical in 1990 and 1991, saying that Americans themselves needed to rise up to define the state of their union, and, you know, kind of got into the weeds a little bit in terms of what the state of the union means, and a little more philosophical. But the word "strong" for President Ronald Reagan was very well received by America. And he told the nation, the State of the Union is strong, but the economy is troubled. And so this kind of allowed him to say, you know, America is doing well, but we still have some things that we need to focus on. But Bill Clinton, George Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, and Joe Biden have used the word "strong" to describe the State of the Union every time that they gave the State of the Union address. And so it's become, over the last 35 years, a little bit of a standard, similarly to "and may God bless America," you know, some of those phrases that our presidents invoke, and they invoke that as a sense of we're coming together as Americans. And we can expect likely that Joe Biden will end the State of the Union address by saying that. But that really raises the question, is the State of the Union strong? I mean, that's become almost this catchphrase now for State of the Union addresses. And we all kind of know, as Americans right now, that the State of the Union is not strong, and that will be much more of a flippant term of phrase. Well, Joe Biden is going to first have to seem cognitively competent tonight. I think that's going to be the number one thing that people are looking for. But as a lot of political pundits have suggested, I think rightly so, that's a pretty low bar. It's a pretty low bar to say, wow, he did such a great job because he knew where he was. You know, if that's all that we're expecting from our U.S. president, then the state of our union is not very strong. But that will be his first challenge. If he overcomes that, and, you know, maybe perhaps they hype him up on, you know, a bunch of meds and make sure he has a nap before he goes down and watches or gives the State of the Union, he'll probably watch it later. Then that's at least he's gotten over threshold one. The second, though, is that he's going to have to tell the American people to not believe our own eyes and our own experience and our own day-to-day lives and the problems that are at the border, the problems, of course, with what the leftists are trying to do with state-funded partial birth abortion on demand recreationally, all of these other things that are such progressive leftist attempts to transform fundamentally the United States. He's going to have to try to spin all of those things. And in that sense, it becomes much more of a campaign speech than it does actually informing Congress of anything. And you can see that in even the lineup of some of the issues that he is projected to say, and some of the previews that we have gotten from not only his chief of staff, but then also from even the list of who First Lady Jill Biden will have as guests at the State of the Union speech. Typically, those guests are acknowledged during the State of the Union. And so that previews a lot of the content of what he'll be talking about. The chief of staff also said that Biden will likely blame the issue on the border with Republicans in Congress, which I find a little bit very much disingenuous. So he's going to suggest that it's not him that's, you know, allowing this whole loophole that we discussed yesterday on air with Mark Krikorian, who's the director of the Center for Immigration Studies. If you missed that yesterday, that interview made me so mad about what the Biden administration is doing by taking all of these. It's 350,000 illegals just so far that they've admitted to, and allowing them to just book their airfare and fly to unknown destinations in America and just stay. That has nothing to do with the physical border. That has everything to do with Biden and his administration trying purposefully to undermine our border security and our national sovereignty. And then we have the guests that Jill Biden will have at the State of the Union, which include, and on the list, are the Alabama woman who was waiting for an embryo transfer as part of her in vitro fertilization treatment when her procedure was allegedly canceled due to the state Supreme Court's ruling that, of course, Democrats are saying effectively bars the practice. We've talked about that a lot on this show, and that's just not the case. But of course, that's how they're going to try to spin it to say, oh, no, women's rights are in peril because of the overturn of Roe versus Wade and these ridiculous conservatives that, you know, actually want to protect life. And then also Kate Cox, the Texas mother who had to travel out of state to receive an abortion. That was a huge news issue. And so she's going to be in attendance, according to the list that's been published. And also Maria Shriver, the former First Lady of California, who is now a healthcare advocate, according to Politico. So you can tell that Biden is going to address those issues. And then according to the previews that media has gotten from the chief of staff, the president will call for restoring Roe versus Wade. And the chief of staff said in a call with Politico, it seems squarely aimed at moderate voters throughout the nation who have repeatedly rejected the right's abortion bans at the ballot box and continue to express outrage at the myriad ways the fight has seeped into other areas, as in Alabama and Texas and some of those things. So Speaker Mike Johnson, it will, of course, have the opportunity to have guests. He will be behind Joe Biden along with Vice President Kamala Harris and have some opportunities. Yesterday in a press conference, he gave a preview of his response to what Joe Biden will say in State of the Union. And let's play that cut here at the end, and hopefully we'll have time if we extend just a little bit more there, Devin, to play this clip because it's about 3 minutes long. But this was Speaker Mike Johnson yesterday.
Tomorrow, the American people, as you know, we're going to hear from President Biden about the State of the Union. And I've been asked many times, as many of us have, if you had to describe in one word what you believe the State of the Union is, you've heard the word crisis, you've heard catastrophe. I think maybe a summary is decline. And I say that with great sadness, we all do. But it's because of this president and his administration that we are indisputably in decline. Our economic strength is in decline. Everyday goods are more expensive. People can barely afford the cost of living now, their groceries and gasoline. Homeownership is increasingly out of reach, and U.S. household debt is at an all-time high. So our economic strength is in decline. American sovereignty is in decline. You've heard us lament the border. The southern border is a total catastrophe. There's no other way to describe that. Traffickers and cartels have taken operational control of the border. Fentanyl poisoning is killing our children. While President Biden opened the border with his reckless executive actions, and remember, we documented at least 64 actions that he and his agencies have taken to open that border wide. It was by design. In the midst of all that, we also learned last week he never one time spoke to the chief of the Border Patrol. It's unconscionable. Innocent Americans from Lake and Riley in Georgia to the 14-year-old rape victim of an illegal immigrant in our home state of Louisiana, as you just heard Leader Scalise talk about. They've all been victimized by those whom the Biden administration has released into our country. He is releasing them into your state. Every state's a border state. The safety of our cities is in decline. Carjackings are up. Attacks against law enforcement are rising. We have more than 600,000 known criminal aliens roaming the streets of America right now, free to reoffend and victimize Americans. The actual number is, of course, much higher. That's the official number that we know about. But we don't know how many people have come across the border. And some of us believe it may be as many as 15 million illegal aliens who have come across that border since Joe Biden walked into the Oval Office 3 years ago. America's presence on the world stage is in decline, and you heard us talk about that this morning as well. Iran, Russia, China, our adversaries are acting more provocatively than they have in many, many years, and we have unrest unlike we haven't seen since World War II. The president is turning his back right now on our greatest ally, Israel. And after Biden's botched withdrawal from Afghanistan, our stature has been diminished to a point that is difficult to calculate. During his address, President Biden is going to try to suggest that the State of the Union is strong, and we expect, as was said, that he's going to say this is a time for a reset. But of course, the State of the Union is not strong, and everybody around the country knows it, and everybody in this room knows it. It doesn't matter what political party you're in, where you lean on the political spectrum, you look at objective facts and you know this country is not in good shape because of its leadership in the White House. And that's why at this point in his term, President Biden is the least popular president in modern history. America is in decline, and nothing he says tomorrow night is going to change that. House Republicans, on the other hand, will continue to fight to hold Biden and his administration accountable. That is our constitutional duty, our responsibility, and we will fulfill it. And we are committed to saving this republic. And that will happen in November when the American people let their voices be heard.
So that was Speaker Mike Johnson yesterday at a press conference previewing his response to the State of the Union address that will be at 9 p.m. Eastern tonight. And you can watch that on the Salem News Channel if you would like to listen to our coverage. And so one of our guests tonight will be Walker Wildman, who is, of course, here with AFA. And I will be anchoring the coverage tonight for the Salem News Channel. So you can tune in. SalemNewsChannel.com shows all of our distribution channels there, 9 p.m. Eastern. And we'll be right back with more on the State of the Union here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are talking about the State of the Union that will be at approximately 9 p.m. Eastern tonight. And we had a listener write in during the break asking why there will be a Spanish speaker and a Republican rebuttal. There has, in at least modern history, been both Democrat and Republican Spanish language response to the State of the Union. And also in modern history, there has always been an opposition party response to the State of the Union and the ability for Republicans to respond to a Democrat president and Democrats to respond to a Republican president. Because really, the State of the Union has become so politicized rather than actually just informing Congress. So joining me now to discuss what Joe Biden has to do besides just remaining competent is our very dear friend, Tim Wildman. So who needs no introduction, but Tim, so beyond just appearing competent, is Biden going to convince anybody tonight that the State of the Union is actually strong?
Wow. Good morning, Jenna. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm great. I love days like today where we get to talk about history and all of these things.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So President Joe Biden tonight is delivering the State of the Union. And I always thought this was in January or February, typically. Am I wrong? I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. It and I find it interesting that it's in March and right after Super Tuesday.
There must not be a set. You know, they maybe Congress and the president, whoever he is, comes to some kind of agreement on when that is. Yeah. So tonight is I'm sorry, I lack enthusiasm.
You're not going to be as enthusiastic as Joe Biden, according to his chief of staff.
I don't know if you can detect that or not, but I've recorded some Blue Bloods, and I don't know. It just depends on if Joe Biden catches my fancy for more than 10 minutes. Listen, what in the world is going on out there?
So I think that the dogs heard you laughing, and they're joining in that expression of lack of enthusiasm. So the boys say hi this morning.
Okay, but nobody's at the door, right?
Possibly. We sometimes get the Amazon delivery guy, and I always put up a thing like, on air, please don't knock. But, they sometimes just don't care.
Right. I understand. Well, anyway, the President of the United States, whoever he is, gives the State of the Union. That's tonight. Joe Biden will deliver that. I don't know what he's going to say or how he's going to say it, but he's challenged. Number one, he's challenged because there's not much he can brag about, seems to me. Now, I'm a conservative, so maybe he can brag about liberal things that he's done to destroy our country. I don't know. Maybe he'll be proud of the tearing the wall down and not literally, but figuratively. Well, he did tear the wall down literally, the one that Trump had built, at least portions of it. So I don't know what he's going to brag about. I guess unemployment's down and the stock market's up. Those are two good things, so you could brag about that. But you know, you got a world in turmoil now, right? You got Israel and the Palestinians in Gaza. You've got Ukraine and Russia, and America plays a big part in these, a big big part in these. And then you've got also, you've got that. You've got politically in the U.S. You've got divisiveness and rancor. We've had that for a number of years, but I mean, it's really fever pitched right now. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what he says and how he says it. I guess how he says it, Jenna, will be as important as what he says, because people are looking at him physically and mentally as a man in decline. And can he thwart that trend in terms of how people view his image tonight?
Yeah, and the perception. Absolutely. And I think it will be really interesting, Tim, to see if he takes more of a divisive position, especially with respect to saying that he wants to restore Roe versus Wade. And
the
chief of staff is saying, we're going to blame the Republicans for the whole border issue. I mean, I thought Joe Biden was supposed to be the president that would bring unity and, you know, we're going to bring class back to the White House. I mean, what happened to all of those promises?
He lied, but if you just want to know what happened there. It's unity if you believe like the left does. Yeah, they're fine to unify with you if you believe like the left does on issues. But
Free to agree with us.
Yes, agree with us. It will be interesting to see what it is. Now, who's going to give the rebuttal for the
Representative Monica de la Cruz is going to deliver the GOP response, and that usually happens about 20 minutes or so after the conclusion of the State of the Union. And it's interesting that they picked her for that position. And there was a lot of speculation that Republicans would pick Donald Trump to deliver the response. I honestly would have loved to see that, because then it would have been more campaign style. But that's probably why the GOP decided to actually have somebody who's a member of Congress.
Was it last year that Sarah Huckabee Sanders knocked it out of the park?
Yes. She was so phenomenal.
Why don't you bring her back? I mean, you know, she hit it out of the park. Bring her back again.
GOP sometimes doesn't listen to us, Tim. If they did, the world would be a better place.
Duly noted. Yeah. But Huckabee Sanders, she did such a great job last year in her response and her rebuttal for the Republicans. Well, I don't know that. Have you the congresswoman you're talking about tonight? What's her name?
Monica de la Cruz. And she's not really known, super well in terms of being, one of those that.
Where's she from?
So she won the. So she is from Texas. She's from Texas.
Oh, okay.
15th congressional district.
Okay. Yes, I know who she is. I haven't heard her talk. I don't think, maybe one or two video clips, but that'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to hearing what she has to say, and I'm sure she will highlight, the great weakness of Biden. Biden, and that is the illegal immigration problem that we have. Problem is an understatement, a catastrophe that we have with our southern border. So she probably highlight that. And and his Hispanic woman from Texas, you know, that brings a lot of credibility to that issue, seems to me.
Yeah, and according to the San Antonio Express News that I've pulled up here, House Speaker Mike Johnson said in a statement that De La Cruz, the first Latina and first Republican to represent the district that stretches from McAllen to San Marcos, quote, encapsulates the very essence of what it means to live the American dream, which I think that is a good contrast to what Joe Biden is doing with these 350,000 illegals that he's just flying across the border into places unknown,
you know,
in the U.S.
That story that you're talking about right there specifically, when I read that, I thought this was a Babylon Bee story.
Right.
Huh? I thought this can't be real. This can't be true, because surely this would have been exposed by now. And what you're talking about is that story that I saw in the Daily Mail. Where did you where did you see it, Jenna?
Yes. So for all the listeners, Tim is just saying that he doesn't listen to this program. Otherwise, he would know.
You
that
broke the
from
story
yesterday morning. So no, I just had the original. So Mark Krikorian, who is the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, was on yesterday. So if you, like Tim, missed that episode,
I did
yesterday,
miss that. I apologize.
That's okay. It's okay. I'm giving the boomer grief.
Okay.
So he's so kind to come on this morning. So
I really shouldn't
tease him.
Generally between 7:25 and 7:50 when I'm in my car. Otherwise, people are asking me questions when I get out of my car at work and get into the office. But otherwise,
so you're blaming Adam and Devin, really, for lack of listening. But
yeah, listen, I didn't come here to argue with you, Jenna, about this.
This is a preview of the State of the Union, of being so divisive. We're just giving listeners kind of what's going to happen.
Duly noted.
But the Center for Immigration Studies, their reporter was the first one to write an article that was then picked up by the Daily Mail, and that was how it spread viral. But a FOIA request was submitted by them, and the Biden administration responded to that by admitting that the 350,000 number, but what they won't reveal is where these flights are landing and where in America, which airports these illegals are coming into. And they're doing that, and get this, they're saying that they won't reveal that because that would pose a security risk. So, you know, that's really hypocritical.
Now, has Karine Jean-Pierre responded to this yet, I wonder?
I have not seen anything, but I generally don't watch her entire press conferences. And
you've got to watch her.
I watched the clips. Yeah. I watched some of the clips, but it's tragic.
Peter Ducey. Sparring, and anyway, listen. This is a serious. Some people say should Biden be impeached on the matter of sabotaging our country with letting people here intentionally by the millions undocumented. We don't know who they are. That's what I mean by undocumented. Where they're coming from? They're entering here illegally, and it's being fostered by our own president. As you and I were texting, I think yesterday, Jenna, you said, why did we impeach? Why did the Congress impeached Mayorkas, right? The Secretary of Homeland Security, but not his boss, who basically tells him what to do, which is Joe Biden. But this story of 350,000 people being flown into the U.S., who's paying for that? You know, we are. The taxpayer, we're paying for that. It's just, that's criminal. To me, that's criminal. I don't know if it's on the books where he violated a particular law, but in my mind, and I think the mind of most fair-minded Americans and taxpayers, it's criminal to use our money to pay for people to come here illegally on planes, 350,000 people, just so the border's relieved. That's what I understood.
And apparently this is being challenged in litigation, and it's frustrating because a lot of those state level challenges are being kicked out based on standing, that there's no articulable harm or injury in fact. But according to Mark Krikorian yesterday, the loophole in immigration law is that there's this thing called parole, and not in a criminal law sense, but that instance by instance, if there's an actual emergency with an illegal at the border, you can bring them over like to go to a hospital, but then take them back. And so he's using this loophole to just have a blanket ability for all of these illegals to come over. So it's a loophole. I think it's criminal. I think it's treason. I think it's absolutely a violation of his oath of office. I think it's an impeachable offense. And so I don't know why the GOP is just staying on this. But this raises the question, Tim, and you know, you and I have talked about this a lot, and listeners among conservatives are very divided over the presidential election. And I know that, you know, we don't as AFA endorse anybody or anything, but just from a personal standpoint, does this change your opinion like it did mine in terms of just needing to, as conservatives, saying Biden just cannot be the person in 2024 because our country will not survive that?
Yeah, you know, when you vote for people in office, whether it's governor, congressman, president, whatever the case, city council, you do have to enter a lot of factors, you know, but the two overarching is I want my vote to promote the good, right? I know that's a broad general word here, good government, and I want my vote to stop the evil, stop the wicked, okay? And with Biden and his administration, those words apply, all right? They do. I mean, those are spiritual words, but they also are serious here. So with what the left is, the secular left in this country, and I call them, they're God haters. Many of them are just God haters, and they certainly hate us as Christians. So you got to use your vote to promote good and to stop evil. And sometimes, those things are in degrees, right? So also, we're not electing, and I had to remind myself this before, we're not electing an elder to the church, and we're not electing a deacon, and we're not electing a pastor, where we would have the perfect right to say, I want purity of doctrine, things I believe. I want them to subscribe to my statement of faith and live it out. Not my statement of faith, but the statement of faith of the church. So I think people get that idea. When you're talking about politics in America, you're talking about the general public voting, all right? So we have expectations that we have of our candidates and our politicians, and in the end, we have to figure out who promotes the good and who stops the evil. And how much, and to the degree it's in which those things are expanding. And with Biden, you've got to stop the secular progressives. You have to stop them, because they're going to change the Supreme Court. Either they're going to add to it, or they're going to change the Supreme Court if they get elected in November. And the federal judiciary in this country, all of the federal judges are appointed by whoever the president is. So it just can't be Biden again. It cannot be Biden again. It would be disastrous for Christians in America. Sorry if that offends anybody.
So well said. Well, you know, Tim, this is why I have so much respect for you, and I love the way that you said that we can't expect purity of doctrine like we could an ecclesiastical leader. I think that is brilliantly said. I'm gonna use that line in my own analysis.
A lot of people do quote me.
I think it's great. We do. Yeah. This is why I like to have you on, and why I listen to today's issues, and you should as well. For all the listeners out there, you should listen to Tim and Ed and the guys, because they're always really brilliant. So we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Thanks for joining, Tim. We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And if you missed that last segment with Tim Wildman, go back and listen, afr.net, and click on the icon for Jenna Ellis in the Morning. I love having Tim on, and have been just so grateful and truly blessed to be part of this radio network. And I don't say that lightly or casually, just because, you know, I get to be here, but because truly I have come to just really, really respect the whole Wildman family as I've gotten to know them over the last about year and a half. Of course, I was familiar with AFA and with the radio network through my previous work with Dr. James Dobson, and you know, of course, listening to the radio network and all of that. But you know, it's different when you get to know people personally and you see them walk through various things, and of course, how they walked through with me, not only in prayer, but support for everything that I went through, but then seeing how they responded to the Alistair Begg issue, seeing how they've responded to, you know, various things that have come at them. And they are have always, the leadership fully of AFA has always done the biblical thing. And they also allow for diversity of opinion here. You know, the hosts are not told what opinions we have to say, or that we even have to agree. I'm sure that I disagree with some hosts and their opinion, but we all agree on the sufficiency of Scripture, the truth of the gospel of Christ, and on doctrine, doctrinal purity, as we talked about, that isn't quite necessary in politics and policy. We can't expect that from necessarily a civil government or from a culture that is apart from God. But I so respect that this ministry is solid in making a difference and standing firm on the truth of the Word of God. And then this comes in to this next story that, speaking of standing firm on the truth, we have seen how the left is trying so hard to advance the what they term the progressive agenda, which is really progressively and increasingly toward literal destruction in the case of transgenders and gender queer theory and all of these things. And this has been highlighted now in a series of reports that have been by WPATH, which is the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. And these WPATH files reveal liver cancer in teens, reduced sexual function, lack of consent. And the headline here from the Daily Signal says, internal documents reveal experimental nature of so-called gender-affirming care. So Tyler O'Neill, who is the managing editor at the Daily Signal and wrote this great piece that you have to read. Some of this is just so profoundly tragic and definitely disturbing. Joins me now. And Tyler, so appreciate this and your continued reporting that you have always stood firm for truth. And now this reporting in the Daily Signal, I think, shows just exactly where we're at with the medical community calling this gender affirming care. But the truth of the matter is that it's anything but that.
Yeah, thanks, Jenna. I say that it's a euphemism, because when you call something gender affirming care, the reality of it is what you're doing to people, to children, you're putting them on these drugs to prevent them from going through normal puberty. And then you're putting them on further drugs to force their bodies to resemble the bodies of the opposite sex. And then, of course, if they go further, you're cutting off healthy body parts and replacing them with facsimiles of the opposite sex's body parts. I mean, this is, it's the kind of thing you would expect from a Frankenstein novel. And yet now we're having almost the entire medical establishment pushing this. And they've been infiltrated, and they've largely been infiltrated by a great deal of money, and there's a financial interest here. But also, you know, WPATH is really the tip of the spear of this movement. And WPATH, you know, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, has essentially become, you know, an activist group masquerading as a health organization. And these files reveal, as if we didn't, and I mean, some of this we knew already, but what these files reveal is that these people know that there are these serious issues, and they're raising these issues. And it's been interesting to see the defense, because there have been transgender, you know, pro-transgender organizations, news outlets, people defending WPATH after the revealing of these documents. And they've been saying, oh, this shows a serious concern and care for patients, and this shows, you know, this shows that WPATH is a professional organization. And it's like, well, actually, no. If you look at what they're talking about, if you look at what they're admitting, and one of the things that really stood out to me was that one of the quote-unquote doctors who's well-known for pushing this stuff admitted that puberty blocking, you know, what she called puberty blockade, is in its infancy. And it's like, if there's a medical quote-unquote treatment that's in its infancy, why are we pushing it on people across the country, not just people, but, you know, teens and younger, even in some cases, kids as young as 8, 9, and 10. Why are we pushing this on them when it hasn't been approved by the FDA for this purpose, when it has, when we've seen now, and they know that these have long-term ramifications, you know, that cross-sex hormones can lead to liver cancer in teenagers. I mean, this is the kind of thing that if any rational human being had known that you would have a case of liver cancer in a teenager because of these drugs, you think they would have immediately said, no, halt, put an end to this.
Yeah, and I'm speaking with Tyler O'Neill, who's the managing editor for the Daily Signal, and this piece is Liver Cancer in Teens, Reduced Sexual Function, Lack of Consent, Internal Documents Reveal Experimental Nature of quote-unquote gender-affirming care. And, you know, as you're describing this, Tyler, I mean, it's not... There's no justification here for the harm that is obviously and intentionally and knowingly being caused to these children and anyone who's a recipient of these types of butchering procedures. I mean, there's no justification, even like there appeared to be initially with, for example, the COVID vaccine. And obviously conservatives were never fans of, and thankfully the Supreme Court agreed that you can't mandate that kind of drug, and especially when it was experimental, there were a lot of questions over that, but at least it appeared to be something that was trying to help a legitimate issue that was out there when we all didn't really know what COVID-19 was. But with this, it's like they're trying to solve a problem that doesn't even exist. And I thought that the medical community, their first obligation is first do no harm. What happened to that?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So I think what happened to that, they created this really absurd and asinine argument where they say, look, these people have a serious mental issue. And of course, interestingly, they say that it's a serious mental issue, you know, gender dysphoria, but having therapy to address underlying mental issues beneath gender dysphoria is out of the question. So, like, the idea that you would try to coach someone through understanding why they want to identify as the opposite sex and then getting at the root issue of that and solving that, which might resolve the gender dysphoria, that's out of the window because that's considered, quote-unquote, conversion therapy. But what you have here is this notion that these people are going to commit suicide unless they are entirely affirmed, unless they are enabled to change their bodies, often at taxpayer expense, to resemble those of the opposite sex. And it's so beyond the pale, this idea. But it's interesting because as a student of Christian history, and I remember the Gnostic movement, you know, Gnosticism, going all the way back, I see a lot of Gnosticism here where, you know, the Gnostics believed that the world... the physical world was evil and the spiritual world was good. And they actually believed that God the Father created the physical world and that was evil, and that God the Son was bringing us to the spiritual world. They were heretics, no question about it. And the church rightly rejected their views. But what we've seen is this Platonic notion that, you know, your soul and your body are completely separable. And it's your soul that matters, and your body is kind of like, you know, stuff to be discarded or changed or forced to adhere to what your soul thinks it is. And, you know, not to get too much into a philosophical debate, but I see the transgender movement as this sort of idea on steroids, where it's your internal sense And if you press them on this, they can't really ground it scientifically. It's not that there are brains that are male or brains that are female, because that would be acknowledging that, you know, the natural development of male and female are different. But they, you know, they don't have a set explanation for it. And I think what it boils down to is a notion of a soul that is, you know, and of course, Christians also believe in the soul. But this soul is almost at odds with the physical body. And you have to have the triumph of the soul over the physical body to change the physical body. And this dangerous cocktail of an idea and the threat that somebody is going to commit suicide unless you affirm that idea, that's how they hoodwinked the medical establishment. And I think a lot of the medical establishment wants to go along with it, partially because they make a lot of money. I mean, anybody who gets set on this path, they have to go through, and even if you're a detransitioner, you know, when you start taking these cross-sex hormones, it messes with your body chemistry. And so even if you stop taking the hormone of the opposite sex, your body doesn't immediately restart making the hormones that adhere with your sex in the amounts that it naturally would. So you have to take drugs on the other side. And so when you get somebody on this path, and of course the surgeries too are not a one-off thing. Jazz Jennings is, you know, the transgender person known as Jazz Jennings, the mother of this person has repeatedly said that she had to force Jazz to continue to open the hole that they made that's a facsimile of a vagina. And it's just like, it's so horrible when you think about these things, because it's like the human body wants to fix a hole that is made in the human body that isn't supposed to be there. And yet this ideology is encouraging actual harm to be perpetrated against these people, such that they have to continue to harm their bodies so that it can affirm this false notion. And it's all based on the faulty premise, the absurd premise, that they're going to commit suicide. If not, I mean, imagine if a Christian were to go to his employer and say, look, I need to not work during Lent because I have a very serious Lenten discipline. And the employer said, well, no, that's too much of an inconvenience. And then the employee said, well, if you don't give me this, I'm going to commit suicide. I mean, what do you say? I think the employer would laugh at the employee. But it's
blackmail, basically.
This is
medical blackmail. And you're so right, Tyler O'Neill, and he's the managing editor at the Daily Signal, that this is a worldview. It's an ideology, and it is false theology, and it's also false anthropology, as in terms of the study of man and who we are as spiritual beings, but also physical beings. And we can't separate that. We don't live in this dualistic type of framework where the spiritual is disconnected from the body. And I think you're right to refer to the Gnostic heresy in all of this, but this is why Christians have to maintain the truth of the Word of God and know sound doctrine, but also know the doctrines that are being taught by the secular, atheistic God haters so that we can combat that with truth. It's not enough just to know truth. We also have to know the errors of what is being taught. And this is why I'm grateful for people like Tyler O'Neill that are pushing out these articles so that we can learn what is actually going on in the culture and hopefully promote the truth of the gospel of Christ. You can read that in the Daily Signal. That's all the time we have for Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Tune into the Salem News Channel tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, where I will be anchoring the State of the Union coverage. You can always reach me and my team here at AFR at jenna@afr.net, and make it a great day for the Lord.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn.
Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.